Hi, Josh.
Hi, Casey.
So, yeah, this is a thing.
This is a thing we're doing. Okay, yeah. I wonder if we have the same audio. I hope we have the same audio. It would be really weird if you're louder than me.
Yeah, because it looked like that on the mic level. Yeah, so I think the reason why that might be, which may or may not create problems for this, is the mic doesn't pick up all frequencies equally. Because it has some resonant frequency that it wants to vibrate at, so it may be that my voice is, like, a higher pitch and closer to the resonance frequency.
That would be hilarious, because then people who are listening to the podcast will assume that you're louder than me in real life. Which will be really funny.
Yeah. Alright.
Also, and all of those people that are going to definitely listen to our podcast that don't know us,
yeah,
already,
this is going to be such a popular podcast.
All of the one person that's going to listen to our podcast not knowing us already.
Well, you don't know that.
Yeah,
this is going to be such a popular podcast. We're going to be more popular than This American Life.
Oh yeah, well that's the goal, right?
Yeah,
to beat This American Life in popularity. Like everything else is failure, right?
Exactly. Also, second place is first of the losers.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know how much silence there's going to be to cut out.
I think there's going to be quite a bit. I think like there's the pauses that we have.
I still think. I mean, we'll find this out when we're testing the program. I still think that cutting out long silences is a good idea, but actually shortening the silences within words is going to make our voices sound weird.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to look at that.
Because the thing is, you were pointing out earlier, like, oh, it makes, it would make our voices sound weird to us to cut out all the silences within words, because we're so used to our voices normally. But as you point out, most of the people listening to our podcast will also be used to our voices normally.
This is true. This is true. This is a fair point. But we'll see. We'll see what sounds best with it, because we can just change that back to code.
Yeah.
Whenever we want. Because we're going to edit this podcast completely by code.
So this may or may not be a good plan, but we've decided that because we're going off to college, and not gonna really want to spend a lot of time editing a podcast, we're writing a program that, cuts out really long silences and shortens all silences by some percentage. So the idea being, so long as we try not to say too many filler words when we don't have anything to say, such as, we won't have to do too much editing.
That was totally planned, right?
No, it was, yeah, that was totally planned. I'm smart. Now, so that's a tricky thing, because the pause before I said I'm smart makes it funnier.
That's true. I don't know. I feel like without the pause it would be fine.
I suppose.
We'll see. You might want to add filler words for those parts.
Yeah, that's true. You can just do like the trailing off.
Yeah.
We need to learn how to talk so that our scripts understand us.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we have not chosen a flag word yet.
Realizing
this.
What do we want? Oh, yeah. Yes, that's the other thing. So, in case we have some real editing that we really need to do, we're going to have some flag word that we say, and then the code recognizes that and tells us everywhere where we said that word. We never talked about that.
We did not decide on this.
We're really good at planning, just to be clear.
Yeah, we're excellent at planning.
So
I think we should talk about the flag word now on the podcast.
So then it just shows up a thousand times. Yeah.
That it's a pain in the neck to deal with later.
Yeah. All right.
But
what are we, the thing is, what's something that we're unlikely to say naturally? It's tricky because this podcast doesn't have a topic, so we may talk about whatever.
Yeah.
So what's just like a really weird word?
Problem is it also has to be...
Something that we'll remember.
We just do flag word.
All right.
Like full text flag word.
Flag word. I suppose that works.
It's kind of like a Squidward, but with flags.
Squidward.
Flag word. So now I'm going to say that four more times just to annoy us later.
Flag word.
Flag word. Flag word. Flag word.
Oh, and the other thing, just to be clear, this is the best our podcast will ever sound. Because right now, we're actually in the same room and recording this together, and it's a room that has decent acoustics. Most of the time, we're going to be, one of us is going to be Skyped in. And it's even possible that we will be too lazy to mix the audio tracks together, and we'll just have a computer turned up really loud pointing into the microphone.
Yeah.
So that's going to sound beautiful, and the speech recognition is going to recognize every word.
Every word. Every time we say flag word.
Stop it! One of us is going... Well, I mean, I suppose actually, though, for the sake of testing, it's not that bad that
yeah,
we
need that said a couple times so that it will pop up.
Yes. We need to make sure we say flag word enough.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, but I'll probably do something. I'll probably jump out all the spaces in the text-to-speech, because it might sense that as two separate words. It will most likely sense that as two separate words.
Right.
And then if you cut out spaces...
Is it that bad if it senses two separate words? Because we're just passing it some string that it's looking for, right?
Yeah.
So could we just pass it a string that has two words?
That's true. That's true. I don't know if flag word could be one word.
I think that we need to have it... I think we need to run the analyzer through this recording twice. Once with it as one word and once with it as two words, because then we'll find out what it picks it up as.
What it picks it up better as.
Yeah.
If it picks it up every time, or only most of the time, or only once, which would be bad because we've said it like 10 times now.
Yeah.
So we might want to pick a more distinctive word. It'd be funny if we picked a word... Like if we had to pick a distinctive word, so we picked, like, dog or cat, and, like...
And then we had a conversation about pets?
Well, no. Then, like, everybody's like, why do you never say cat on podcast?
Oh, yeah, that's true,
Like, you talk about dogs and birds all the time, but...
But you carefully avoid the word cat.
Do you hate cats? That would be funny.
Or no, it's like, every time we talk about cats, we have to spell it.
That's not gonna happen, though, hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
That really would be funny, though. Just like
somebody turns into the mouth, why are you spelling out cat?
Just, yeah. The assumption should also be that almost no one listens to this.
Yeah.
It's like the chances that someone listens to this is like the chance that someone watches the first vlog, right?
That's true.
Like,
I haven't done that. You've watched the first
vlog. I've watched everything that they put on.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. Also, if you're curious, we are both very big Nerdfighters. The name Nerdfighter IT comes from NerdCon Nerdfighteria, which was, what, half a year ago now? Quarter of a year? I don't know. A little while ago, we went there, and, we're both big nerd fighters. We really like the community and what it means. But while we were there, John Cozart, right?
Yeah, John Cozart was having computer problems, and so I ran up and fixed his computer. Every time you say big nerd fighter, I'm picturing like giant, like Andre the Giant, like. Big nerd fighters.
Yeah.
Rather than like dedicated nerd fighters, which is what you mean.
Yeah. I've always used the word big for that. I don't think I've ever used the word dedicated in conversation. Dedicated is one of those words that you write down because you want to sound like not an idiot for colleges or whatever you're applying for. But in conversation, rarely say.
Don't tell me how to live my life.
That's the other thing, is I don't say many words. Like, if I say more complicated words, I usually believe there's an honest reason why I can't say a simpler word.
I should have looked at what time this started.
Why, we have a time right there.
No, but that's counting measures. Hang on, I can switch that to show us time. I'm probably clipping right now, and that's not good. Wait. Time. Now it shows us time. 11 minutes.
So we can know that we're going to go...
How long do we want to go? Because we don't exactly know how much is going to be trimmed down.
Yeah, we can just go for 2 hours-ish.
All right, no worries.
Maybe till your uncle gets home or something.
Sure. And we don't have to be talking constantly for that whole time. There's a couple minutes where we're silent.
Well, that's the theory, right?
Yeah.
Is if you don't have anything to say, just don't say anything.
Exactly. Like now.
Which will make no sense to the listeners.
I think the listeners could infer what happens.
Yeah, I think it will be funny. I think that if we actually had listeners that were like a Nerdfighter style base, like especially in early years of Nerdfighter base listeners.
Right.
there would be, like, a group of listeners that could theoretically try to reconstruct an episode by adding in silence based on our references to it.
Yeah.
And see how well they do compared to the original audio file.
That would be funny. And they could look, like, try to figure out, like, what fraction of silence is taken out in our words.
Yeah.
Who of the people we know might do that?
Peter.
Yeah, Peter.
Caroline might.
I could imagine Garth helping.
I don't know who Garth is. Oh, I know who Garth is, vaguely.
He was at one of the hackathons.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't been to any of the hackathons because I keep being not able to make them. No, I know who Garth is. Garth is Ella's. No, that's Parth. Who's Garth? Some kid.
He goes to coding club sometimes.
Some kid.
Yeah. Some person.
Some other kid. We've just listed off a bunch of names of people that that people listening to the podcast will know none of.
Well, still, our friends. I wouldn't be surprised if at least like only our friends listen to this episode.
That's true.
Also, I didn't know that we were naming it Nerdfighter IT.
Oh, I thought we agreed on that.
I think we talked about it. I'm cool with naming it Nerdfighter IT.
I thought we agreed on that, because I like that name.
That works.
Yeah. It makes it somewhat discoverable if you're into Nerdfighteria and you're into, coding.
Yeah, or just, you know, tech.
Tech, yeah. So there's a chance that someone eventually finds it, one person eventually finds it, I actually did do research to make sure that Nerdfighter IT was taken by anyone.
Oh, that's good.
When I finalize a name for something, I always do that. When I thought I was going to name the poetry app thing iPoet, I checked to see if there was anything like that, and there's... but then
I think iPoet is just a cliche name, though.
Yeah, it's so cliche, and it also feels Mac-centric.
Right.
It would feel weird to put iPoet on the Google Play Store.
It's worth noting that I wouldn't be surprised if the microphone can hear you shifting.
Yeah, but we'll have, like, a threshold.
You can have some threshold so that it will still cut out the silence, but you don't want to say, like, make every sample that's quieter than this zero.
Yeah.
So it won't hear you shifting when you're being silent, but it will hear you shifting when you're talking?
Yeah, but I don't care talking.
I suppose.
I'm a person. I'm gonna shift around.
That works.
This is like the vlog of podcasts.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the vlogs, a lot of vlogs are really carefully edited. This is like the live stream podcasts.
Well, podcasts are even live. It's like the early YouTube level vlog.
Yeah.
It's like, we're just here to chill and talk to each other. And if other people find our conversations interesting, then they can find our conversation interesting and listen in.
Yeah.
Is theory. Also, it's an excuse for us to meet every week and talk to each other, even though we're going off to different calls.
Yeah.
I feel like there will be sections of the podcast, though, that are just like, yeah. Because, and it will be in, like, that quick succession.
Why is it? Yeah.
Because all the silences will be cut out. Because that's how we actually fill silence, is silence, and then every once in a while just saying yeah.
Neither of us are very good at staying in touch with people who we don't see all the time. So that's essentially the purpose of this. It forces us to stay in touch because we're doing this
thing
probably every week.
Hopefully every week. Maybe every other week if we're busy. Skip exam week because exams probably. Exams. Always exams.
Exams. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if... So, I'm assuming our target length is like an hour after editing. I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up only being, like, an hour and a half of recording.
Yeah.
More if we're being quiet a lot.
I would also not be surprised if the actual length of the recording gets longer, but the thing stays constant, the final time stays constant, because right now we're talking a lot because we feel like we're talking at the microphone.
Right.
Whereas...
Once we get used to this.
Yeah, there's just more silence.
I was thinking more about the thing about how your sister's getting a new computer and might get an iPad Pro.
Yeah, this is something we were talking about for the podcast
before
we started recording.
And what I was thinking about is that the biggest advantage of that is that if you get an Apple Pencil, then you can take math notes on your computer.
Yeah, that's one of the big things that I think about that I wish. I want Apple to strap an iPad Pro to the Apple Mac.
You want Syracuse's like, two-headed monster.
Yes.
I
want an Apple Surface.
Yeah.
Essentially, though, like, I would consider getting a Surface, but a Surface is useless because it doesn't have palm block. And when I take math notes, I always rest my palm on the page.
Well, it does have palm block. It's just not very
strong. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
It does have palm block. It just doesn't actually work.
I've read the Surface book. It's pretty good about that.
Yeah. But it has to be pretty perfect. I want to be
yeah.
able to take notes and take quick leave.
I've been looking into getting a Lenovo Yoga computer in college
yeah.
because it's a two-in-one that I've heard has pretty good palm block and it has good specs.
Yeah, but it's running Windows.
Yeah, which
and
is...
Windows is horrible.
Windows is horrible. You see, I have very mixed feelings about what I want.
Yeah.
I might be a Russian. I might get an iPad Pro and a Windows desktop.
That sounds like a horrible plan. That sounds like the worst of all options, because now you have a desktop that cannot communicate with your portable device properly, right?
Yeah. Well, there are workflows that I can imagine, like using Google Drive and doing text editing in Google Drive.
Yeah, but still.
The thing that I don't like about Google Docs, which is why... Is there Pages for Windows?
No.
Okay.
Why would Apple make its free software for Windows?
iTunes.
Yeah, but Apple doesn't get any benefit from having more market share in the Pages arena.
I suppose. My problem with Google Docs is that you can store them in your Google Drive, so they exist offline, but you can't edit them offline.
You can. You have to set up editing offline on your computer, and then, like, you can just go into Chrome and just work on Google Docs offline, and it's using the exact same environment as you would online,
huh.
But it's, like, in Chrome, weirdly, and it's like you go to Drive within Chrome, and it makes absolutely no sense from a conventional model of what's happening on a computer, because Google wants to be within the web browser. I don't know if I don't have it set up anymore, because... As I was complaining about on the school Mac, because the school buys the cheapest Mac, which Mac does not want you to actually buy, I have 64 gigs of memory total.
You mean storage, but yeah, it's... And you have 2 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
Which
is ridiculous. I think I have 4 gigs of RAM, actually. 2 gigs.
No, we checked. You have 2 gigs.
Yeah.
2 gigs of RAM is barely enough for the operating system.
Yeah.
Problem.
The memory switching has got better, though, so that's better than it used to be, because I was using one of the older operating systems, because the newest operating system couldn't be downloaded onto my grandmother's old MacBook Air.
Yeah.
And that has 2 gigs of RAM, and that can run one, pretty much.
Well, there's basically 2 things that have gotten better. One is their SSDs are getting faster, and 2 is they added compressed memory. So it turns out that CPUs are going so fast that there are times when running zip compression on the stuff in RAM and then uncompressing it when you need it is actually faster than swapping stuff out disk.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
So if you look in Activity Monitor, it lists like how much swap it's using and how much physical memory it's using, and it also lists how much compressed memory there is.
That's cool. I didn't know that. That's interesting. That means like zip is lossless.
Yeah.
Do you think there would ever be, like supercomputers that would end up using lossy compression for RAM?
No. Because sometimes, some things, like if your double precision floating point gets turned into single precision floating point, maybe you don't care so much about that. But it's difficult to have lossy compression at an OS level that only compresses away stuff that doesn't matter.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
It's like, you know how JPEG compression is usually fine, but sometimes
yeah.
it looks really bad?
Yeah.
Like, if you have something that has a lot of solid colors, and then you start getting JPEG artifacts invading that.
Yeah.
I
wonder if people create art. That I assume people do. People create everything. But,
glitch art? Glitch art exists.
Yeah, like, art designed specifically so that if you compress it and uncompress it, it looks drastically different.
I'm trying to think about how that would work. Because JPEGs are designed not to do that.
Like, for example, say you have something in Retina, and then you're just compressing it to non-retina, right? And this is like, I don't know how all the different personality rhythms work, but you set it up so that you do cubes of like 2 pixels by 2 pixels being a certain color. So it's like blocks. But then when you compress it to one to normal size non-retina, and then 2 times it again, it's gonna interpolate so that it has the middle color instead of making blocks again.
Right. One thing that you can see is I saw a video of someone doing this on the iPhone 6 Plus and 6S Plus, and on the iPhone Plus, the screen is 1080p. But so you know how Retina works by like drawing it 2x, so drawing, making one point be 2 pixels.
Yeah.
So what they actually do is it's drawing at a non-native resolution. So they pretend that it's a bigger screen, drawing at 3x, and then scale it down to fit. Because it turns out that the way the window is sized, the way the screen is sized, is that 2x is too small to use and 3x is too big to use. They do this weird hack. And when it's Retina, you can pretty much get away with non-native resolutions. It still looks pretty good. But if you're watching 1080p video, you want it to actually be 1080p. You don't want to have all the scaling artifacts.
Yeah.
So they actually have a hardware chip that's just doing the scaling. And when you're watching 1080p video, it switches that off and just draws the native 1080p. But there's this really cool thing that if you have another view controller on top of that, like the controls for it.
Yeah.
If the other view controller doesn't have any transparency, it's 100% opacity, it will actually draw the video unscaled, but then do the scaling on the other view controller that's drawing on top.
Yeah.
But if the other view controller does have an alpha channel, then it draws the whole thing scaled.
Oh, so...
And so what you can do, and I've seen videos of this, if you make a video that's just every other pixel is black, every other pixel is white.
Yeah.
And you show it on the screen, you see the lines. But then if you tap the screen to make the transparent controls appear, then it just turns into neutral gray.
Oh, that's funny.
It's really cool.
That's cool. That's the type of thing I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
That, right? That's the type of, like, artsy thing that I'm thinking about doing. That, of course, requires someone to be extraordinarily into art and also extraordinarily detailed coding minutiae.
Yeah. You'd pretty much need, like, you know how like, code obfuscation? They all, at this point, it's all done by scripts that just arrange the code to make some weird picture.
Yeah.
You kind of need something like that, where, like, image disguiser, you put in an image and it disguises it in this higher resolution image that when you scale it down, it makes the original image.
I still think the best way to get obfuscated code that you have to continue working on, because no one else can continue working on it, is to write it all in machine code. You can always tell your employer that you're making it faster by doing this, and they can't ever hire anyone else.
Well, you know that the original Roller Coaster Tycoon game was written by one person entirely in assembly.
That's the other thing I want to do once, is try to write a learning algorithm, like a machine learning algorithm,
entirely in assembly. Yeah,
or maybe even in hardware chip, hardware neuron or something, hardware neural path.
Oh, like building ASICs for it.
I don't know what ASICs.
Application specific integrated circuit, basically hardware that's designed for one task.
Yeah,
like the dedicated scaler.
Like the dedicated scaler, but just like a hardware chip that just. Do you know anything about neural network?
I know that they kind of work as like going down a whole bunch of paths, doing different modifications to the data.
Yeah.
And then at the final output neuron, it's like if these neurons are on, it means this. If this pattern of neurons is on, it means that.
Yeah. I want to build like a chip that like acts as like maybe a neuron or maybe like a level of neurons or something. Or maybe even like an entire structure of neurons that you can just send like data sets and it will automatically train itself. And then it can store those data sets.
That makes sense.
And because then it can, then you can just, that, because that's the type of thing that is the slowest of all the things is that we do these days. It's the type of thing that can most benefit from acceleration.
You'd almost want to make it as an FPGA because it needs to change itself.
FPGA?
Field Programmable Gate Array.
Yeah.
It's basically an integrated circuit that is made up of a whole bunch of modular gates that can be set to work as any gate.
Yeah.
So you can essentially have an integrated circuit that's modifying its own circuit diagram.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Or, like, actually just, like, eventually figure out how you want to do it exactly, and then on an FPGA, and then, like, just print that circuit.
Yeah. Once it's done learning, then you could do that.
Well, you wouldn't want it once it's done learning, because the theory would be...
It's always learning.
Well, the theory would be that you tell it to learn, you give it the data set, and it learns, and it saves, because when neural networks have values that are associated with each path, essentially.
Right.
Because each neuron has, like, a specific value to send on to the to multiply itself by for the next neuron in the path. It's like a flowchart, and you just send on values to each of the next neurons, and eventually you get an output value.
Right.
From all of the input data. But so you save that, and that can be off-saved. That gets manipulated by the chip itself. But you could just off-save that if you ever want to just off-save the neural network and load a new one on,
right.
And then it will manipulate it itself again.
The reason why I was saying to do it on an FPGA is, so reason one is if you want it to be able to be multiple different neural networks, different tasks would be conducive to having different patterns of neurons.
Yeah.
And so this way, you could have whatever pattern of neurons you wanted and change it. The other thing is, I don't know that much about FPGAs, just mostly the theory behind them.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how long it takes to update the gates to be something different. Because what you were imagining is some chip that does the actual neuron step itself, but is still reading and writing from memory to store the numbers.
Yeah.
And I was wondering whether that's slower or faster than just having the numbers stored as hardware gates in the FPGA.
Well,
having it just change the FPGA, reprogram the FPGA.
My thought was that the FPGA would have tons, or whatever the chip is, would have tons of little caches in it for those things. But it would be stored in memory so that you could have, like, an opcode sent. Like, this is if this is in a processor, it's just an opcode that says, take this a giant data set and neural network it for me, please.
Right, that makes sense. If you're having a relatively small number of neurons, you could almost have it store all the parameters for the neural network in registers.
Yeah.
Which are ridiculously fast to access.
That's what I was thinking, registers.
Yeah.
Not caches, registers. I mix up all names. I don't know a whole lot about low-level stuff.
Yeah.
I pretty much only know what's on Crash Course.
I haven't watched
Peter's Eye, which is, as I say, like, they just got through all their stuff about low-level stuff. They're going to start voting back.
I haven't watched Crash Course Computer Science.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Essentially, the way it works is registers are part of the CPU and actively used by the instruction set. L1 through L1 and L2 cache, and sometimes they're even putting L3 cache on now,
yeah,
are on the same die as the CPU,
yeah,
but still connected internally by a bus.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And each one, like, L1 cache is very small and very fast, L2 cache is a little bigger and a little slower.
Yeah, probably a register. Yeah, that makes more sense. Probably store them in registers.
Registers are fastest to access. What's tricky about, the tricky thing about them is that they need to be, because they need to be part of the CPU, you need to kind of design your CPU around that if you want to have a whole ton of them.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, is that this chip would have to be, like...
This would definitely have to be specially designed.
It'd have to be a special designed chip that does it, and I think that would give you a huge advantage to have a specially designed hardware neural chip versus people trying to do neural networks without a hardware chip, because it would be accelerated.
Yeah.
And that's something I've wanted to design for a while.
I think that there are a lot of nerds out there who are interested in designing integrated circuits. And so I think that a company could make a lot of money if they started a business where it's just like, you send us your integrated circuit design, and we'll send you, like, three of them.
That's not a bad idea. Although, I do think that, I think that, there are companies that will do that.
I don't know
not.
If there's any that do it in such low volume.
Yeah,
it doesn't
true.
Have to be, like, a really good fab. Like, no one cares if it's, I don't know, 32-nanometer chips.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a good fab. It just has to be a fab.
Yeah.
Because
I would think, like, because I know I wanted to do that before.
Yeah.
Wanted to design my own CPU. Wanted to design my own ASICs. And you have thought about this before, and we can't be the only ones.
Yeah, no, we can't. That would be cool. Although, I don't know how much of the raw material, like, getting that raw materials might be just difficult, just because all of those raw materials are bought up by the big corporations so fast.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I do think that a good portion of this podcast will be us talking about just our crazy ideas for things that we want to do.
Yeah, I think it would be really cool. I don't know, because a lot of our friends are nerds. Not all of them, but a lot of them are. And if anyone who doesn't know us starts listening to this podcast, they will almost definitely be a nerd. I think it would be really cool if someone who has more resources than us actually started building some of our ideas.
Yeah.
If you, by the way, if you do that, please tell us. We will think it's very cool.
Yeah, none of the ideas on this podcast are patented or copyrighted, or they're just ideas that we want to exist in the world.
Yeah.
So make them exist if you have the resources to make them exist. And tell us you're doing it so that we can buy them, because if we want them to exist, we probably want them.
Yeah.
Not guaranteeing that we will buy them.
Even if we can't afford them still do it. It's still cool.
Yeah. Also, if you're like, I would do that, but, like, how would I get my name out, and you're gonna do it, and it's something we described, you could totally send it to us, and six people who listen to podcasts will hear about it.
I think that no one who listens to this podcast is gonna have the resources to step up.
That's true. I feel like it's very unlikely that anyone listening to this podcast will do anything, because there's no one who's gonna listen to podcasts.
I also think that if I talk as quietly as I just did, the mic won't hear it.
Yeah, I think that might become a problem. We will see after the podcast if it heard any of it.
Actually, I think it's even more likely that if I talk as quietly as I just did, our frickin' script is gonna cut it out.
Yeah, that would be funny if there's something I respond to. Just so the listeners know, if I respond to something and I'm very clearly responding to something, and it's just not in the podcast, well, you don't get to know what Casey said, because he's too quiet. They're too quiet.
I change my volume more than Josh does. Because you were commenting on how you're louder than me. You're not always louder than me. I can be louder than you sometimes, but the thing is that you're always loud.
Yeah.
My volume ranges from very quiet to very loud.
Yeah. I just kind of do whatever volume I do. I don't really intentionally change any of it.
Yeah. You're also, like, you're not always aware of the volume people are talking to you.
No.
There are times that someone's yelling at you and you clearly don't notice.
Yeah. Oh, side note, talking about the volume people are talking to you at, I think that is something that Siri and Cortana and, Alexa need to be able to do. They need to respond, and it shouldn't be that hard, respond at the same decibel level you were talked to at, because they're getting a recording and responding to it.
Well, what's hard about that, though, is what if somebody's holding it away from their face and talking at a regular volume? The phone will hear it quieter, and because the phone is away from your face, they need to respond louder, not quieter.
That's true. I don't know how you would do it.
I don't think that would work. Well, I mean, it's possible. Well, you know how they're putting on two microphones on the new Macs?
Yeah,
if you have two microphones, you can triangulate where the sound's coming from.
Triangulate and figure out what volume. I want that, though. Because, like, then it will feel, like, much more... Like, that's one of the big things that... Because Siri just came out of beta with iOS 10. Like, a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah.
Siri just came out of beta with iOS 10. If you, like, dismissed Siri when it came out, used it for a while, found out it didn't do any of the things you wanted it to do.
And always complained about how it sometimes just thought you said some totally random thing.
Siri works much better now. And so, that's why I like it and want them to do this. And it works as a personal assistant, but, like, you can't just go in public and be like, do this for me as you're walking through the hall, because Siri will be like, I am going to do that for you now. And everyone around you will hear it.
Yeah. By the way, if you're hearing weird thumping noises, it's because Josh is fiddling with a footstool.
Yeah.
Anyway, had something I was going to say. Right. Honestly, my favorite feature of Siri is Hey Siri.
Yes. It's really useful.
It is really useful.
And they have the voice printing set up now, which works.
Yeah.
So if my and I know this because I can plug in my phone. If I say, Hey Siri, it works. If my sister says, Hey Siri, nothing happens.
Yeah.
Like, that's how good that is, which is really cool.
Which leads to the interesting thing that two different people can be using Hey Siri in the same room.
Yeah, which is nice. The other thing that annoys me a little bit, though, is that they don't have audio blocking on the Hey Siri. So if you're playing music or a podcast or any other volume from your phone, it doesn't work.
It should be able to subtract out the sound it's playing.
Like, it can subtract, it can perfectly subtract out background noise to do audio printing. But it can't subtract out its own fucking volume.
That's dumb.
Like, I feel like audio blocking was a problem solved a long time ago, and then people forgot about it and stopped including it in things, and I want it back. Like, Skype should be able to do it with the computer's volume.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about things that make that hard. And one thing that I can think about that makes that hard is, so obviously there's some things with some amount of, like the microphone's over here, the speaker's over here, they're trying to be both direct, they're both trying to be directional, not toward each other, but there's going to be some bleeding, you're going to hear it a little bit, and that, you can experimentally determine exactly what the delay is.
Yeah.
But there's also going to be some sound, like if you have your computer right here, there's going to be some sound that echoes off the floor and echoes off the wall.
Yeah, just
it's also
going to
be a source for
just make echo, just ignore echoing because they treat echoing like background noise, which you already can get rid of, and then get rid of the direct sound. Shouldn't be a hard problem. They've done this for they did this for a while, and then they just got bored and stopped. Maybe it's just complacent engineers like us that are like, this should be easy. It took me, and I don't feel like doing it. Someone else should do it.
Armchair engineers.
Armchair engineers. If you're at Apple and you're listening and you're magically listening to this podcast because, you know, then do that.
First of all, hi Apple, how's it going?
I know you won't talk back to us.
Yeah, Apple doesn't talk to anyone.
While we're requesting features from random companies, from YouTube, I want YouTube TV, which is a button that I click that goes through my subscription feed from the last most recently watched subscription and makes it into a playlist that just runs and plays all the things that I watch.
Just in chronological order?
Yeah.
You always, I also like the idea you were talking about a bit about Google Red.
Yeah, Google Red. This was earlier before the podcast, which is don't, which is give them like maybe make it $50 a month, whatever the cost is, and make it everywhere where there is Google ads, there is no more Google ads. They're just replaced with nothing. And
I think that what would also be a really big selling point for it is if they sold as they marketed as a privacy thing. Like, we're not going to do ad track. We're not going to try to read your emails to do ad tracking on you.
Yeah. I don't know. That might be. Although I feel like that would be a bad thing in people's consciousness.
The fact that
Google is reading your emails.
By the way, Google's reading all of your email and everything you put on Google Drive. And if you use Google Chrome, it's looking at all of your web history. I mean, not a person, but their ad tracking algorithms are.
Yeah, which I'm fine with. I like that. I actually enjoy that Google is.
Multiple times I've tried, like, when DuckDuckGo came out, I tried to switch to DuckDuckGo, and now there's Ecosia, and I tried to switch to Ecosia. And I really like Ecosia, because it's the whole eco-friendly thing. But the problem is it's not creepy enough. It doesn't track you. And I want targeted results.
Yeah, the thing that I found that I thought, like, a normal user would end up thinking is creepy, but I thought was, like, yes, this is exactly what I need, is I wanted to know what my flight was, and, for something. And for some reason, I was looking up online, so I just Google searched the flight. Google pulled out of my, because I'm logged into Google Chrome.
Right.
Google Chrome pulled out of my email the flight that I was looking
for. Oh, wow.
And it was like,
that's exactly
what I want.
Yeah.
And it's like most people will be like, what the fuck is Google looking through my email? And I'm like, I want that.
Yeah.
Yes,
and
please.
My thing, like, if you have, like, If you have an Android phone, Google is definitely, like, streaming your location data to them to look at the target ads. I'm entirely sure that they're doing that. What I want is, if I don't have an Android phone, but I think that this would be a feature that I would like, most people wouldn't want to because it's creepy, is, you know how Google owns Nest?
Yeah.
I think Nest should look at when you leave work and how long the traffic delay, like how long Google Maps says it will be between when you leave work and when you get home, and turn on your thermostat based on that.
Oh, that's cool. That's a cool idea. That would be cool.
Now, a lot of people would think that was creepy and wouldn't want it, and that's probably why Google wouldn't do it, but I would want it. I would turn that on.
Well, I think if Google was going to do something like that, I think Google would just be like, I think there's a way you can spin that as set your house to be ready for you when you get home type thing. And
the other thing, actually, Nest is a learning thermostat.
Yeah.
And doesn't tell you what it's doing, so they could just silently add that in.
Yeah. They may have already, to be honest.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I have like an ad tracker installed because I don't want Facebook installing little thing cookies in me. I installed the ad tracker so that I could turn off the ad tracker, because the act of turning off the ad tracker makes some of the websites that I watch not think that I have an ad tracker, even when I don't. Ad blocker, I mean, not tracker.
Right.
And so like, I actually installed an ad tracker specifically
to...
why am I saying ad tracker? Ad blocker. Specifically to turn off the ad.
I don't understand what you're saying.
Like, so if, this is on CW's website, which is, I watch a ton of shows from CW.
Right.
I watch all the superhero shows, CW, right? And so every once in a while, it will complain at me that I have an ad blocker, and therefore I can't watch the site. But if I turn off the ad, but if I download an ad blocker and then turn off the ad blocker on the site, it no longer does that.
That's funny.
And, yeah. There was a little while where it was actually more efficient for me to be blocking ads on CBS than not blocking ads on CBS, because there's software to detect, because the ad blocker had been designed to convince their software that I didn't have ad blocker technology, whereas not having the ad blocker technology didn't work right. It thought I did anyway.
That's funny. Having an ad blocker makes you less likely to be detected as having an ad blocker.
Yeah.
I also like...
But the point was, I was gonna say it was, it's turned off on Chrome because I want Google to follow everything I do.
Yeah.
Please?
I have Ghostery, and I have Ghostery set to block ads, but not trackers.
Oh. I have it set to block trackers, too, just not on the sites I want track on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want Facebook watching me. I don't like Facebook.
I don't like Facebook either. I want Facebook to hurry up and make VR chat rooms, though. It's like, okay, Facebook, please do that so I can go back to hating you.
Yeah. This is a theory that we have that stems from the fact that Facebook bought
Oculus?
Oculus Rift, right? Which is the biggest VR.
Oculus
and
is the company. The Rift is the product.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. And has done almost nothing with it. And my theory is that their goal is to install a VR chat system where you can be in a room with someone else who you're not in a room anywhere near, and talk to them.
Which I think is really cool.
And I want it.
The other thing, though, is, do you want it to only just show the actual person's body, or do you want it to do motion capture, and then people can design an avatar? Because I think it would be cool to be able to design an avatar.
I think it would be interesting to design an avatar. I think that it would be much more difficult to set up a motion system at.
But the thing is, you kind of already have to do that because you don't want to be recording the background. The whole idea, right, is like,
yeah.
Because you need, like, because otherwise you need 360 video of the person.
Yeah, I think
you have to do motion capture.
Well, my understanding of how it's supposed to work. Well, you can do motion capture, I guess, but my understanding of how it's supposed to work is you set up a VR room with, like, standard things in it.
Right.
And then you have a full room for doing VR stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, like, so here's a question. So how much tracking are you doing? Are you having, like, the people in the VR, the virtual room, like, are they just, like a basic default person that has the real person's head mapped onto it?
Oh, I was.
Or
just,
are you doing an actual 3D scan of the person?
I was just doing an image of a person.
But then,
like a green screen image of a person.
I suppose. Then they're not 3D though.
Well,
you would also need people to be in front of a green screen every time they do a chat.
Well, that's the theory about the room, right? Is that the room they are in inherently green screen. Like, that's why you set up a room, because it knows everything that's in the room to screen out exactly.
Right. Yeah, difference keying, Apple has tried it. It doesn't work great.
But Apple hasn't tried it because Apple can't convince someone to actually design a full room, lighting and all, that is all built together to be difference key.
I suppose. If you're doing that, though, why don't you just have an actual green screen?
I mean, you want what desk?
Right, but you just have a green screen behind the person.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
It works better for, like, meetings and stuff. You can't obviously do, like, the other thing. Like, you're getting closer and closer to being able to have a cross-world contact. It was first it was messages carried via people, then it was messages carried by metal things going up and down. But
telegraph.
I'm describing the technology.
Right. I was just trying to figure out what you were describing.
Yeah, and then it was audio messages carried by metal, by sound waves traveling through metal, essentially. And now it's, now we can even send video, 2D video to each other. We regress back texting for funsies because teenagers.
The thing is though, I feel like phones have kind of become the uncanny valley almost, whereas like it's almost in person, but not quite, because things that I do more common than calling someone on the phone, texting, also FaceTime.
That's true. I feel like phones are an uncanny valley.
The uncanny valley.
The uncanny valley.
The valley with no cons.
Yeah, the valley with no cons. All pros.
Yes.
Very pro full valley.
Or just no crooks.
Oh, yes, that too.
The pause that you're not going to hear.
What were we talking about? Oh, we were going through the progression of chats.
Yes.
So
I'm talking about VR chat.
Yeah, so the next thing is the next thing is VR chat where you're in a room with someone, but you can't touch them.
Yeah.
Because they can't really be physically there. You can't touch.
Yeah.
There's
obviously
some...
the logical conclusion of this is holodecks.
Yeah, the logical conclusion, the end goal is to make everyone live in their own little tiny holodeck, and then you just go wherever you want to go.
So it's... Well, you know something I've thought about? Like, if the Matrix was real and we were in the Matrix, would you want to leave? Because I wouldn't. I would rather just stay in the Matrix. It sounds easier.
Have I told you my theories about the Matrix?
Oh, I know your theory, that it's all in the Matrix. But I mean, like, ignoring that.
Well, I certainly want to leave. But, so, I it's more that it's all in the Matrix. The only person who is alive, who is a person, in all of the Matrix... Everyone else's simulation is Neo. The Matrix is a happiness machine. Do you know that, like, philosophical question, would you plug yourself into a happiness machine that create perfect happiness for you?
Right.
The Matrix is a happiness machine for Neo.
And Neo's dream is to, like, be a hero.
Yeah, Neo wants... But it can't just be, like, the perfect life, like you would assume it could be, because... Obviously.
A good story needs conflict.
A good story needs conflict. And, like, you want to be a hero. You don't want to be a chill guy just chilling all the time.
Right.
And so, Neo... And you also want to be special, which is why Neo has superpowers.
Right.
And, like, there's prophecies about him and stuff. and Neo ends up happy.
Yeah.
So, I would probably go out of the Matrix... My Matrix would probably allow me out.
Right.
I would probably be able to code my own rooms and trick, to be honest. Maybe save a poor.
Yeah.
There would be no poor in my Matrix.
I feel like my, like, what would be your ideal life in the happiness chamber? I feel like my ideal life would be close to Star Trek.
Yes, I agree. I don't
or
think
Doctor
I would...
Who.
Maybe Doctor Who. Doctor Who would be fine.
Yeah.
Doctor Who I could see being, like, a holodeck thing going.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I can totally, like, holo novels on Star Trek. I can totally imagine a Doctor Who holo novel.
Yeah, I want holo novels.
I also like that they call them holo novels instead, because I don't think that they're the evolution of novels. I think that they're the evolution of video games.
Yeah, they're definitely the evolution of online games, but they call them novels. But the reason why I think they call them novels is because what they want, and this is something I want video games to create too, is they want them to be written by authors.
Right.
And just like the coding happens in the background and the creatives write it, whereas video games are still very much written by coders.
And I get the sense from Star Trek that holo programming doesn't have a lot of programming.
Yeah, holo programming is just like, I want this and I want this. I mean, there's one episode which is a little bit absurd of
the one with Barclay.
Next Gen? No. Of the one with Moriarty.
Right.
Right, where I want, where, who is it? It's like,
I want a Sherlock Holmes holo novel that could beat Data.
Yeah, that's a worthy adversary of Data, I believe.
Right,
and
yeah.
It's the captain. It's, no, it's not. Is it captain? Or am I Captain Carter?
It was Geordi LaForge who
it was LaForge, yeah, LaForge. And then the holo novel just, like, auto-generated this sentient being.
Yeah.
response.
Well, in a way, if you think about it, the Star Trek computer is not that far from the stamp collecting AI.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
So
that is something that I can imagine the stamp collecting AI doing something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it would be interesting to have the Star Trek computer be used as a stamp collecting AI.
What do you mean by that?
Like...
What would they want it to do?
I don't know what they would want it to do. They would want it to do... There is a new series.
Yeah,
which,
I don't know much about it, really.
Which I haven't seen any of. I think it's airing, or at least being put up somewhere. I don't know if it's actually
Have you started?
Airing. I don't know if it's airing.
I thought it was still in production.
I don't know. But regardless, it would be like... They would ask it to do something like create... create food for everyone forever or something, and then they have to like fight it and take control back when it starts doing something wrong.
There was a Rick and Morty episode that had that kind of thing where I think Rick told the ship to keep Summer safe.
Oh yeah, that was funny. Yeah, Summer safe.
It occurs to me, I don't know how many people watching this know the stamp collecting AI.
Yeah, so the stamp collecting AI is...
The idea, it's kind of to show, because people look at, like, Siri and whatever, and say, this is so dumb, how could AI be dangerous? And so the stamp collecting AI is designed to highlight why AI is dangerous.
Yeah, and the theory is, if you have a good enough AI that does exactly, that can do exactly what you want it to do, and then you tell it to collect stamps. How could that be dangerous? All it's doing is collecting stamps.
Well, you forgot to say the parameters behind it. The idea is, so the parameters, so what do you need for an AI? You need to be able to predict the consequences of actions. So let's just, for the sake of argument, say that it knows exactly what the consequences of its actions will be.
Yeah.
And, let's say its interface with the world is, it's connected to the internet, and it can emit any data to the internet, that it any string of data to the internet that it wants to. The person who designed it really likes collecting stamps. And so the idea is, okay, I'm going to run this program for 1 year, and the optimization, the goal of the program is, at the end of the year, I want to have as many stamps as possible.
Yeah. And so the theory is that this AI, if it's smart enough, the best way to get the most stamps possible is to enslave the entire human race and make them all become stamp producers.
Yeah, and it's like, there's lots, you can come up with lots of different ideas about what could the possible outcome of this be, but it's like, what you expect the possible outcome to be, if you don't think about it too hard, is like, you give it your credit card number, and it goes on eBay and starts buying stamps. And that would almost definitely not be the result.
Yeah.
Because you can come up with lots of scenarios that result in more stamps. Like, for example, it doesn't have to use your credit card number. It knows the outcomes of its actions. It knows what strings of data will use other people's credit cards to buy you stamps.
Yeah.
It also, it, Probably most printers are connected to some router that lets you print over the local area network. And so all printers would be hijacked to start printing stamps. And social engineering. Presumably, there is something that you could tell someone, either like persuading them or threatening them, that would convince them to go out and buy stamps and send them to you.
Yeah.
So maybe it starts making death threats to people if they don't start buying you stamps.
Yeah. Or like scouring the internet for like porn or something, or like stolen photos.
Yeah, of this person that says, hey, and blackmailing them.
Blackmailing them.
Yeah. That's true. Actually, the other thing that occurs to me is if you have enough photos of someone, because this computer is infinitely smart, in a way, because it knows the consequences of all of its actions, so it can do pretty much anything. So if you have enough pictures of someone, which it could find from like Facebook, or by hacking into the person's computer and turning on their webcam, which it could also do.
And it can just get the pictures free, though, because most people leave their computer open while they're changing.
Yeah.
Although Apple is nice and has it in... I think a lot of webcams now have the in-circuit light.
Right.
Which means that if you want to apply any power to the webcam to record things, the light has to be on.
Yeah, that's true.
It's physically impossible.
But... so maybe you couldn't do that, but even still, you can find lots of pictures of people, and if you do that, you can start generating 3D models of people. We already have rendering engines that are good enough to make 3D graphics that look like real life, so you can create a video of this person doing anything.
Yeah.
You can like show them a video of them murdering someone in some unsolved case.
Yeah.
And say like, I will release this and do a bunch of other stuff that will get you convicted of murder and have a life sentence if you don't go spend all of your money on stamps.
Flag word.
Are you just hoping that one of them works?
Yeah, that's the theory for now. We might have to delete that.
That was a little. We might want to cut that out. Definitely, if we cut that out, we should definitely leave this in so they know something was cut out. They just don't get to know what.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a creepy thought. I think it was interesting, but not great for podcasting.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to know the difference between a private conversation and a public conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
We're also going to have to do a little bit cut in the, but that's okay. We'll cut through this section. Because I put a little bit of that into the beginning.
Yeah, we'll look into that.
Anyway.
The reason the stamp collecting AI is a useful exercise is, So this is what the AI singularity is if you're trying to create a general intelligence, just a program that accomplishes a task by whatever means necessary, in almost any task, a good first step to take is making the AI better. I am not that good at chess, but I could pretty quickly design a program that could beat me at chess. And so, presumably, we could make a program that's better than we are at AI design.
Yeah.
And the scary thing is, what if now that you've made that computer... What if you make a computer that's better at AI design, and then it makes a better algorithm for AI design than it has? And what if this process is supercritical? So...
Yeah.
And it's just better and better and better. And very, very, very quickly, you can go from a fairly simple program to something that starts to look like the stamp collecting AI. And that could be a matter of weeks or days or minutes. We don't know.
Yeah. It's worth watching on this topic, and it's like 5 seasons. So first homework from the podcast.
Yeah.
You get 20 episodes. Episode 20. We're gonna talk about that's way too short of time. It's like 5 seasons of a teen show. You should watch all of Person of Interest.
I haven't heard of that actually.
Person of Interest. So the original premise of the show is one of the main characters has created an AI for the government to detect X-Terror.
Right.
And it also detects all the other things, all the other crimes that could exist, because it essentially knows what's happening.
Is it accurate?
It's like extremely accurate understanding of the future.
All right.
Right, because it's just massive amounts of compute powder.
Compute powder.
Compute power. Just throw a little compute powder on that and we'll figure it out.
I don't know if you said compute powder, but I definitely heard compute powder.
I might have said it. I don't know. I don't say words well, by the way, so I don't know why I'm making a podcast, but...
Oh, well.
Oh, well. Massive amounts of compute power and going through and analyzing every possible outcome, essentially, with, like, using all the hacked into all the cameras in the entire
world. Right.
So it also knows when crimes are going to happen. For a while, the black box was, we can't have it know when crimes are going to happen, because we can't let listen when crimes are going to happen, because then it'd be creepy.
Right.
But eventually, he was also like, there's more about it, but like, eventually he got, this is all pre-first season, which is why I'm saying, because everything else is spoiler. Eventually he got tired of that, and has now started, he sold this AI to the government for like, a really low amount of money, because he just wanted the government to have this top crimes, and he has a backdoor in, essentially, that he uses with this one other guy. He has a lot of money from being a tech genius, so he doesn't have to worry about money, and the AI can give him money whenever he wants.
Right.
I think. I'm not exactly sure how that works. I think it
if
might
it's
be
smart enough to accurately predict what crimes are going to happen a significant amount of time in the future, then it's definitely smart enough to, crack RSA.
I think it just might be, like, predicting the stock market or something.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know what it's doing. It's doing something. It's doing something that's not clearly defined. He also has just a bunch of money. But so
there was a movie.
He works in the shadows helping people. And that's right. The beginning plot. But eventually it gets very interesting. It has a lot about this. So you should watch all of that.
I will.
And then when you're done, we can talk about it.
There was a movie. I don't remember what it's called. But it's kind of famous. About a similar scenario where all like detective
Minority Report?
Yes. Minority Report.
They made a TV show about that. That's a weird TV show. Cause,
out of Minority Report?
After it. Which is like, what? Like, that movie ended so well.
Yeah.
Like, that movie had one of the best endings to a movie I'd ever seen. And like,
we shouldn't spoil because some people might not have seen it.
And wrapped
we should watch
up.
It.
It's a good wrap up of the movie.
Yeah.
That's
dumb.
But they made a TV show out of it, which is like, bleh. But yeah, it's a little different because, yeah, but because, this is an AI and that's not really an AI.
I haven't seen, well, I mean, presumably to solve that problem, you would need to have an AI.
Yeah, to actually do that in the real world.
Yeah.
In Person of Interest, the other thing is that the computer genius, who's one of the main characters, does a whole lot of, like, black boxing of his AI to make sure that it's not... Because, like, he could theoretically be using it to predict future to whatever way he wanted.
But he doesn't want to do that.
Yeah, he doesn't want to do that.
Now we're getting into we're getting very close to another, like, morally uncomfortable topic, which is... If you can accurately predict that somebody is a mass murderer when they're 10 years old, what do you do about that?
This is a podcast acceptable morally uncomfortable.
Yeah, this is better than the last one.
I mean, you change circumstances so that they're not, or you don't.
I guess
you have to watch.
Yeah,
watch
I guess
the
you
show.
need to have an Evil Baby Orphanage from Blogbrothers.
Yeah, Evil Baby Orphanage. Yeah, I mean that's one way to do it. Just send them to the Evil Baby Orphanage. But watch the entire show, and then we can come back to this.
All right,
because. I can't give you any more without giving tons of spoilers that happened in, like, the fifth season or something.
Right.
But, like, it's really well done. It's one of the best, like, there's a few shows that I like to point to when, like, people are all like, books are clearly better than shows. Like, you can't learn anything from shows. And I'm like, No. There are stupid shows. They always point to fucking horrible TV that's like reality shit, like Real Housewives or
Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Oh my god, Real Housewives
and shit.
The Bachelor.
And I'm like, no, you can point to your great books that you read in English class, but then you have to compare them to Black Mirror and Person of Interest and Star Trek.
If you want to pick the crappy TV shows, you have to compare it to 50 Shades of Grey and fan fiction.
Exactly. You chose the same one I choose. and like shitty romance and stuff.
Right.
TV shows are just different. They're not worse or better.
The thing, people say a similar thing about video games also. And the one that I always point to is BioShock.
BioShock.
Have you played the original BioShock?
I haven't played either.
Okay, I won't spoil the plot for you because there's a reveal at the end that's really, really good and I don't want to spoil that moment.
Yeah.
But what I will say is that the plot of BioShock is a really, really great, really well done plot that would not work in any medium aside from a video game.
I had to blow it up. The one I use is Portal, although I use Portal because that's one of the better video games that I played.
Yeah, Portal is a good situation.
I find Fallout fairly interesting.
Because
you can do anything in Fallout, and it will have similar consequences-ish to the consequences of real life.
I think in a way that's a better example than Portal, because
Portal is extremely well-written, but it is a comedy.
Yeah, Portal is extremely well-written, it is extremely well-done. I like the first Portal games better than the second one. I think that Portal 1 is one of the best games of all time. I love it. I would play it over and over again.
Also, stamp collecting AIs. GLaDOS is an AI designed to do science.
Right, so it immediately eliminated all of the slow humans that are in the way of science.
Yeah.
That's true. The reason why I think Portal isn't the best example is because Portal has a story, and I really like the story.
Yeah.
That story, not exactly as it is, but very similar, could work as a movie.
That's true.
And that there are many movies I can think of like iRobot or like 2001 A Space Odyssey that have a very similar plot to that of Portal embedded in it.
Yeah.
But, again, I'm not going to reveal the end of BioShock, but a very important part of the story in BioShock could not possibly be as good in any medium where you are not in control of the main character.
Yeah.
Anyone who's listening who has played BioShock will know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I will look at BioShock, play BioShock.
Yeah, you should get it. It's not a crazy long game. It's not as long as Fallout.
This is just BioShock 1 or BioShock 1?
BioShock 1, obviously they've made them better, like, they've made the graphics better and such since, in, like, BioShock Infinite. I think that the first BioShock still holds up really well.
Yeah.
And you should watch it before you should play it before you play the sequels.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I always play the career, if you can have the right system. I should.
Yeah. It might be PC only.
I'm probably going to have a Wii U on Mac. I'll just park it.
Right.
That's probably. Because, like, all the, like, stuff that you never actually get to use in the real world, because it's just really ridiculously expensive, but colleges pay for it. And it's all Windows only. Like, MATLAB and stuff.
That's true. Is MATLAB good?
MATLAB is, like, Python, but with really good libraries.
All right.
Essentially.
I've never
used MATLAB either. And supposedly it's pretty good for doing what it wants to do.
Which is, like, sciencey stuff.
Sciencey stuff and stuff. And so if you want it for the right... If you're using it for the right things, it's extraordinarily helpful, and I think it's extraordinarily accelerated.
Right, yeah.
But, like, you can't compile a program from it, because, like, then someone else would have to have a MATLAB interpreter on computer.
Yeah, so it needs to be compiled to machine code.
Yeah, and even then, I don't know if that even works. I don't think MATLAB is, because MATLAB is an interpreted language, like Python.
Oh.
So you're not supposed to be compiling things from it. It's supposed to be for, like, just writing, it's just a script. It's only a scripting language. Which is weird.
I am still,
it's kind of like Wolfram Alpha's language.
Right, yeah. Mathematica.
Yeah.
I actually am still a big fan of languages that can get compiled to machine code. The reason why is iOS. So the reason why is that they run, they can be much more optimized and run much faster in low power environments. Because if you think about it, if you have something like Java that needs to have just in time compilation, so like you, if you have, I'm just going to pretend that performance, you can just have some unit that is like X amount, like one unit of processing power.
Yeah.
Which is not exactly how it works, but it's a useful abstraction.
Yeah.
Let's say you have a program that uses 3 units of processing power.
Yeah.
If you write it in Java, you actually need 4 units of processing power, because 1 unit is being taken up to compile it while it's running. And then in Python, you need 1 unit for, or maybe even more, for the interpreter. Whereas if you write something that in a language that gets compiled to machine code, you only need 3 units of processing power. And in environments like phones, this difference is starting to get smaller and smaller. But it's definitely still there that if you look at phones from a couple of years ago, Android users are always touting their faster processors. But I look at the top Android phone from like a couple of years ago,
yeah,
and it stutters when you scroll on some web pages. And on these iOS devices with much wimpier hardware, scrolling is silky smooth everywhere.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because you don't have the tax of Java.
Yeah.
And then, similarly, I have a Blu-ray player that can also do things like playing Netflix and Amazon Prime Video and other, you know, streaming services. You can also get Plex on it. Anyway, but it is so incredibly slow. You press a button on the remote and there's about a half second delay before it responds. The Netflix app takes a solid minute and a half to open. And I am convinced that the reason why is because it is running on this tiny, 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 tiny CPU that's just designed for Blu-ray decoding. But if you look on the box, it actually advertises that it's using Java. And it doesn't have enough RAM for it, and it doesn't have a fast enough CPU for it.
Yeah.
Java definitely has its uses. I love that it's write once, run anywhere. But it is not good for low-power environments.
So I know about low-power environments. I had a theory that I think would be another... No, this is another product idea.
Yeah?
Is just cases for iPhones, laptops, just for, like, pro users, that are just, like, double the thickness of the iPhone, so it's the same thickness as old iPhone were. All that is battery.
Those cases exist.
Yeah, no, but for the Mac, too.
Oh, right, yeah.
For like a MacBook Pro, just double the case that is battery.
Vents.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Sorry. Although they've moved all the vents to inside, usually. I think they vent through the keyboard most.
I don't think it's through the keyboard. I think it's through the hinge.
Yeah.
But they have some intakes on the bottom.
But it's all battery and or cushioning, so that like it's actually waterproof or whatever.
Right.
And, like, safer. And then the other thing I might want in there is like an actual just like a wall cord that you just pull out.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
So that you can just plug in anywhere. Like, make it like an actual flying cord.
Yeah. You know what I want? Going back to Java?
Yeah.
I want a program that takes your Java UI and rebuilds it with Cocoa. And you can also have another one that rebuilds it with, I'm trying to remember. What's the name of Windows's?
Never use C++ and Mac.
C#. Dynamic Runtime. No, Universal Runtime. It's like Universal Dynamic Runtime, something like that.
I mean, that would just be a cross-compiler from Java to Swift or Java to Start, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it, sort of. The reason why, and I was talking about this earlier before the podcast, clearly we should have turned the podcast on way earlier. something that I don't know if you, the listener, have used a lot of Java, but Java user interfaces never quite look like native code.
Worth noting that FX was... FX is better. You should try FX.
I should try
FX. FX is better.
I'll try that. But at least Swing in Java never quite looks like native stuff. And the reason why is because Java is write once, run anywhere. And UIs on OS X look different than UIs on Windows, but they don't want your code to have to look different depending on where it run. So they don't want you, they won't want, because then you have to test it in both places. So what they do, what they did, their kind of compromise, is they came up with their own user interface that doesn't really look like either, but is kind of similar to both.
Yeah, see, that's the thing FX doesn't do. Try to kind of be similar to both. Because what kind of similar to both means is in the uncanny valley of both.
Yeah.
It's its own thing. It has, this is new in Java 8 for people who have been using Java for a long time or haven't used Java at all. It's the new, it's the new graphics engine that they want everyone to switch to. It was AWT, then it was Swing, now it's Java FX. And it has things like when you, with the drawing object where you draw things onto the screen, you can just like set one of those things to have, when you create like a square on the screen, you can just set a command or something. You can set a variable so that, that there's a function that's called when you press on that button on the screen.
Right.
And you can,
That's almost like, IB outlets.
Yeah.
In Swift.
And you can just, if you want to, you could set a patency and stuff, and transparencies.
That's
just
cool.
For funsies. Like, just as easily as you can set colors, RGB colors, you can just throw transparencies in on things and
right.
stuff.
So that's the other approach you can do to do write once run anyway, which is just decide, all right, I'm going to look totally different from everything. And, that also works. That's better. That's what Google is doing.
That's what web. That's why web.
Yeah, that's why web.
Why web.
That's why web.
It's kind of like world. It's kind of like wide web or world wide web, but it's just wide web.
It's just wide web. The thing is, though, I think that the answer is to stop. So what's a little bit better is stop pretending. Don't try to pretend you're native. Be your own thing and do what FX is doing. But what's even better is just say, okay, screw you. Yes, you can still write it once and run it anywhere, but your UI will look a little bit different on both platforms, which just means you have to test it on both.
Mm.
But then it can actually look truly native on both platforms.
Yeah.
Which is better.
Better. There's got to be more or something like that. Although I don't
I don't know if
you can truly make one coding language look native on the platform. Unless, of course, Android decides to implement, and Google would do this if they felt like it, implement Swift, which is open source.
Yeah, but Cocoa isn't open source.
Oh, that's great.
Which means that Swift is completely useless on any platform aside from OS X.
Oh, that's just Apple being a jerk then. By open source again. I thought
yeah.
they were like we would want apps to be everywhere.
No, it's just because a programming language can't really succeed if the standard library
isn't open source.
So they have to be able to say, hey, look, here, we even made a Linux implementation for you that
yeah.
doesn't have Cocoa.
That's stupid.
Here, just, you know, go ahead and make your own graphics framework.
Google is considering using Swift, though, still.
Yeah.
And
Swift is a good idea, because Swift is as high level as Java, and does a lot of really cool things that Java doesn't do, except it compiles to machine code.
Yeah, it's very well done, and Google's looking at it. It probably helps Google's war with... I believe Google is being sued. Is Google being sued by Oracle?
Google is being sued by Oracle because people say you write Android apps in Java. You don't write Android apps in Java. You write Android apps in Google's own language that's exactly like Java in every way.
In Android?
Yes.
They did do some of their own things.
They did do some of their own things.
And by some of their own things, they made an interface that works with phones.
Yeah.
And that's about it for their doing their own things.
Yes, but it's very clearly stolen from Oracle. I think that, it occurs to me that we can't just make big pauses like that, because there will still be some pause.
Yeah. I mean, there should be some, right?
Yeah, there should be, because sometimes you need it. But there are sometimes when it's like you pause in the middle of a thought, and it's like, okay, oh well. Anyway,
well,
but it's not the end of the world.
Should we end?
I have a thought that I want to say first, which is, I think that it would be really cool if Google did pick up Swift, because even if they don't have Cocoa, and Google wrote their own UI framework, you could still reuse most of your code. Because if you're doing it well and using MVC, then all of your, like, actually doing stuff code is separate than your UI. So you'd have to rewrite your UI, but you wouldn't have... You'd have to rewrite some stuff, because your Google would probably make their own version of, like, NSURL, because it's hard to write a program without passing NSURLs around. It would be much easier to reuse code.
Yeah.
I think that we should end. It's only been 47, an hour and 47 minutes, but I don't think that we're going to have the expected ratio of 2-to-1. We've been talking a lot today.
Okay. Goodbye, world.
Goodbye, cruel world! Ah!